It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we'll talk to Democratic State Assembly Representative Katrina Shankland about water contamination issues in the state. First, there's a lot of variety in the world of Indian food. And for people who didn't grow up with it, it can be hard to know where to start if you want to make it at home. On this week's edition of Food Friday, our guest has a lot of ideas, and she says it doesn't have to be a faithful recreation of a recipe from India. It can be Indian-ish. Priya Krishna writes about food and has contributed to the New York Times, Bon Appetit, and The New Yorker. She wrote a college-focused cookbook about dining hall hacks. She's got a new cookbook out that draws from her mother's cooking with Indian influences. The book is Indian-ish, Recipes and Antics from a Modern American Family. Priya, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, give us this concept of Indian-ish that you got for your mom and the rest of your family.
Yeah, well, you know, my mom, she only learned to cook once she immigrated to the U.S. from India. So she had these memories of foods that she ate as a child, aloo gobi, dal chawal, but she didn't have all the ingredients she was looking for. So what was sort of born out of those limitations were these beautiful hybridized dishes like sag paneer, but with feta instead of paneer, and pizza made with roti. You know, we grew up sort of just eating food that was rooted in Indian flavors, but definitely pulled from influences from, you know, the PBS cooking shows my mom was watching, the countries she was traveling to, and just what was available in American grocery stores.
And you write that Indian food or Indian-ish food is everyday food. And for people who maybe been to a lot of Indian restaurants in the United States and encountered, as I have, you know, really heavy stuff that is definitely what Sesame Street would call sometimes food, that might be kind of a surprise.
Yeah, I think there are all these misconceptions. Indian food is complicated. It's heavy. It's rich. The food I grew up with is nothing like that. First of all, it's quick and straightforward. It takes 20 to 25 minutes to make start to finish. These are not project recipes. And second, you know, it's light, bright, healthy-ish fare. You know, Indian food, like any cuisine, has heavier indulgences and, you know, brighter food. But the food I grew up with was really healthy. It was kind of nothing like what you would find in restaurants.
Now, I think in the United States, for a lot of us, when we hear Indian food, we think of a dish with curry in the name. And you write, well, sorry, there's not really such a thing as curry. Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I just despise the word curry. It was basically this word that was popularized by European colonizers in India and kind of exported throughout the West and used to kind of just reduce Indian food to a single word. When I think of curry, I think of this sort of monochromatic stew. And, you know, that word sort of ignores the nuance inherent in Indian food. And I hate that instead of calling the foods by their actual, the names of the dishes, people just call everything a curry. So I explicitly wanted to ban that word from the book.
Talking to Priya Krishna about her new book, Indian-ish, a cookbook, a lot of foods inspired by Indian cuisine. Priya, one technique that I've done, and I didn't know it had a name, chonk. Am I saying that right?
Chonk, yeah.
What is that? Explain it to us.
Sure. It is spices and or herbs that have been tempered in oil or ghee. And it's sort of this topper for, you know, dal, any kind of rice, a vegetable dish. And it adds this like shot of richness. And what happens is when you temper spices in oil, the oil gets infused with the spices. The spices get this amazing texture. It brings out the flavor and the aromatics of the spices. It sort of adds this layer of complexity to any dish and this really amazing crunch. You know, it's sort of like finishing something, like drizzling a finished pasta with a pat with olive oil or melting in a pat of butter. It's like that, but more flavorful.
And Exhibit A is doing this with cumin seed.
Yes. Yeah. That's probably my all-time favorite chonk. You heat up some ghee, add cumin seeds, take it off the heat, add dried chilies, red chili powder, and asafoetida or hing, which is this sort of garlicky-like tree resin that is used in Indian cuisine. And it just, you can put it over anything from dal to noodles to nachos. Chonk nachos are the greatest thing.
That sounds good. Now, you mentioned ghee there. Talk about ghee, how important it is, and if we can fake it if we don't have it.
Honestly, ghee is super fundamental to Indian food. I think it just makes everything taste so good. It kind of is like butter, but amplified. It's like butterscotchy butter, basically. And really all you do is just melt a stick of butter in a pan. And once you see the milk solids floating on top, just skim those off and you're left with ghee. You know, if you don't feel like making ghee, you can totally just use butter or you can use oil as we do in the book. I think one thing that I really wanted to do with this book is, you know, present substitutions wherever I could, because my mom's entire cooking regimen was based off of having to make substitutions.
Now let's get to some of the recipes. You've shared a few of them with us. We've got them online at WPR.org/foodfriday. Roti pizza. You mentioned making pizzas. Now, roti is that round bread, right? And how do we make a good Indian-ish roti pizza?
Roti pizza. Roti is also known as chapati. It's basically just like a wheat flatbread. And I mean, you just pre-bake the rotis, then you add your toppings. Our favorite ones to add, which is very Indian-ish, is sliced red onions, cheddar cheese, and cilantro chutney. And then you bake it, and just it's amazing the way the crust kind of crisps and curls and chars just like a pizza crust. And it's sort of like having your own little personal pizza, and you can make a bunch of them and top them with all sorts of things, from tomatoes and mozzarella to, we love thinly sliced potatoes and Parmesan cheese and rosemary. And you can just, we love just putting a bunch out and having a party.
And you mentioned substitutions. You suggest one here. You know, some places in Wisconsin, rotis you could find in grocery stores. Some places you probably can't. You say whole wheat tortillas can do in a pinch.
They work great. In fact, my mom in Texas, we have a local grocer called Central Market. And my mom loves their whole wheat tortillas and uses them instead of roti. I mean, basically the ingredients are the same in those ones, and they're so good.
And I imagine once you do the basics, you suggest a couple toppings, but you could mix and match different Indian-themed veggies, meats, sauces, whatever, on your roti pizza.
They don't even have to be Indian-themed. We've done tomatoes, mozzarella, and basil. We've done Kalamata olives, capers, and onions. I think, you know, there's no limit to what you can put on a roti pizza.
We're talking to Priya Krishna. She's a food writer, and her new book is called Indian-ish Recipes and Antics from a Modern American Family. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about how to cook Indian-influenced food in your own kitchen? Do you have some local tips on where to buy specific spices or ingredients? Is this part of your family heritage? Do you have Indian-ish dishes that your family has put together? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our Food Friday conversation with Priya Krishna. Her new cookbook is Indian-ish, Recipes and Antics from a Modern American Family. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you tried or been thinking about trying to cook Indian food or Indian-influenced food yourself? What kind of successes, what kind of failures have you had along the way? Is this food you grew up with and you'd want to share a favorite? Or just have a question for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Priya, load up our spice arsenal for us, if you would. What kind of handful of key spices do we want to have around to make Indian-ish food?
Well, I think one thing to point out is that not all Indian food has spices. You know, you don't need a cabinet full of spices to make a lot of Indian dishes. But my favorite, all-time favorite, is cumin seeds. I think cumin seeds are so universal. You can use them in so many different ways. Some people are used to ground cumin, but the seeds are amazing. Mustard seeds and curry leaves are sort of this duet of flavors. It's really earthy and herbaceous. I love putting that on anything. And then same with coriander seeds. Those are just flavor bombs. And I love putting them in sag feta and cardamom pods. I think the key here is finding the spices in their whole form, because that's when they're going to be the most flavorful. They're going to, you know, smell the most amazing coming out of the dish.
Now, in a past Food Friday, I talked to a guest. I think his book was called Flavor Walla, and he got me doing what is chonk. I didn't know it was called that. And also taking those cumin seeds or coriander seeds or whatever and grinding them up fresh right before I cook with them. Is that something you do too?
No, I mean, I think it's a common misconception that every single Indian cook is making like spice blends with six spices and putting them into the dish. Indian food is can be a lot more straightforward than that. Oftentimes, my mom is just tossing the whole spices directly into the pan, and they taste great. I sometimes feel like there's this misconception that every dish involves six spices, and you're grinding those spices, and it's not that complicated.
Yeah, I feel like I could live with like just cumin and salt and pepper sometimes. My family sometimes enough with the cumin, Rob, but I could go with it.
As could I. You'll notice in a lot of my recipes, cumin plays a main role.
Well, let's check out another recipe you've shared with us, matar paneer. Now, we should love paneer in Wisconsin. It's a kind of cheese, right?
Mm-hmm. It's pronounced mutter paneer.
Mutter paneer. Thank you.
Yeah.
And tell us about that recipe.
Yeah. I mean, that is kind of as classic as it gets. There's really very little that's Indian, that's ish about it. That's just straight up, you know, North Indian. It's just this wonderful, like, aromatic cardamom and coriander based tomato gravy. And you mix in, you know, peas and chunks of paneer, and the paneer is mild, but it does such an amazing job of soaking up all the flavors of that tomato gravy, and served over rice, it is just like the ultimate entertaining food. No one dislikes mutter paneer.
And you mentioned earlier the idea of substituting in feta cheese for that paneer, and that's going to add a different kind of flavor for sure.
That's actually I would not suggest
for this
substituting
recipe.
In feta for this recipe. That's for a recipe called feta cooked like sag paneer, or sag feta.
And sag is a spinach thing, right?
Yeah. So sag, where I'm from in India, it sort of refers to greens generally. In some places, it refers to mustard greens, but we basically just make a gravy with spinach. And instead of folding in paneer, we fold in feta, because that spinach and feta combination is just so deadly.
All right. I want to get to our desserts now. You shared a cardamom bread pudding, shahi toast. Tell us about how this one comes together.
It could not be easier. You are just heating up heavy cream and mixing in sugar and crushed fresh cardamom out of the pods. That's really what makes this dish. Then you're toasting little pieces of white bread, soaking that in the cream, and then you just let it sit in the fridge overnight. I think this dish has maybe four or five ingredients, but it tastes super luxurious, and you kind of scoop the shahi toast out like it with an ice cream scoop, and just these drippy pieces of bread with that infused cardamom cream, and it's just so delicious. That with a cup of chai is the best dessert.
We're talking to Priya Krishna. Her new cookbook is called Indian-ish Recipes and Antics from a Modern American Family. Now, you list your mom as a co-author here, Ritu Krishna. What was it like working with your mom on this project?
Yeah, it's Ritu Krishna. She was amazing. My mom is a software programmer by training. She, now manages a team of programmers, and she just project managed the heck out of this cookbook. She wrote all 100 recipes. She was sort of the calming presence during the photo shoot. She, you know, was right there alongside me reading the book for errors, making sure the recipes were airtight. You know, obviously she's my mom, so we bickered quite a bit. But she was an amazing partner. I couldn't have asked her anyone better.
And most of the pictures I think I read somewhere are in her cookware or her servingware.
Yeah, my mom, we've been lucky because my mom was a software programmer for the airline industry. We were able to travel all around the world. And my mom loves picking up like little, you know, bits and pottery and vases from each place we go to. So we shot most of the dishes and pottery from around the world.
Now, it's of course spring heading into summer. Is there a favorite seasonal ingredient going on right now that you like to mix into your cooking? Maybe something that made its way into your book.
Yeah, I mean, we're like on the cusp of tomato season, which makes me so happy. And one of my favorite recipes in the book is a quick pickle you make with green chilies and, you know, really awesome, top of season cherry tomatoes. And basically what you're doing is just combining a bunch of spices in a pot with green chilies, and then right at the end you hit it with the cherry tomatoes, and then but you don't cook it, you just kind of dump it into a bowl, and it takes 5 minutes to put together, and the cherry tomatoes don't cook, so they're like sort of a, this really fresh component contrasted against the cooked chilies and the intensity of the spices, and you have those like peak season summery sweet like candy tomatoes. It just is perfect.
And one more ingredient, it's a little further out in the season for us, but you write that you're a fan of okra, and I am too, but I'm not always sure what to do with it. What are some of your favorite ways as an okra fan do you use it?
The recipe in my book is the only way I cook okra, because I think it is the best way. Basically, what you're doing is you're just cooking it on almost like you would do like an asparagus on really, really high heat with a little bit of oil until it sort of starts to char and almost burn and get really crispy. That's how you eliminate that kind of slimy note that people tend to dislike about okra. But, you know, that recipe is perfect okra to me.
And you say actually frozen okra can work better than the fresh stuff?
Yeah. I mean, my parents were all about convenience growing up. You know, my mom didn't always have time to, you know, chop vegetables. So we relied a lot on frozen things and other convenience foods. And, you know, we actually found that frozen okra works beautifully.
We'll leave it there for now. Priya, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's Priya Krishna. Her new cookbook is Indian-ish, Recipes and Antics from a Modern American Family. You could find a few of the recipes that she shared with us. We've got a dessert in there. We've got mutar paneer and a roti pizza. You can use rotis or whole wheat tortillas in a pinch. Find those all and lots of other Food Friday recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday. It's time now for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with an exploration of the Wisconsin cocktail. It's part of WPR's ongoing series exploring Wisconsin's complicated relationship with alcohol.
When you think about a cocktail that embodies Wisconsin, what comes to mind?
Typically, you look for the old-fashioned.
The old-fashioned, because that's like the quintessential Wisconsin cocktail.
Ah, yes, the old-fashioned. And in Wisconsin, that typically means a brandy old-fashioned sweet or sour.
And that's the Wisconsin one where you add soda to it, which most people usually brandy with sometimes whiskey or bourbon.
That's John Dye, the owner of Bryant's, an historic cocktail lounge in Milwaukee. He says the original old-fashioned is a simple cocktail with bitters, sugar, and a spirit.
When somebody comes from out of town and they order an old-fashioned, that's generally what they want. If they order, somebody orders an old-fashioned without specifying sweet or sour, we have to ask them where they're from. And that's usually a way to get to the bottom of it.
Some say the recipe made its way to Wisconsin from New Orleans via the Mississippi River. But Wisconsinites really latched onto the cocktail after Korbel was introduced at the Chicago World's Fair in 1893. Bryant's is known for another cocktail with Wisconsin roots. Its founder, Bryant Sharp, invented a few ice cream cocktails back in the 1930s for a liquor company.
I think the most famous one that people know is the Pink Squirrel. It's sort of a cream-based drink that has sort of an almond flavor to it, and it's a pink color.
Although you can find recipes for a Pink Squirrel in books and online, the folks at Bryant's will not divulge its secret recipe. Dye says it's a tradition that goes back to Sharp's time.
When he first started hiring people, he would actually wrap all the bottles in foil and everything was numbered, so not even the bartenders would know what they were pouring. So it's always been very secret. And we still keep a sort of secret nature of our recipes. We don't tell people our recipes and we kind of keep them to ourselves and have for 80 years. And a lot of the recipes we use are Bryant's original recipes, which is a pretty neat thing.
But what other cocktails embody Wisconsin?
Well, you start with your pint glass, then you fill it with ice, and it gets 2 shots of vodka. And then we use our Bloody Mary mix is Zing Zing, and you top it off with a pickle, couple olives, mushroom.
Don't forget the beer chaser.
Wash down the tomato juice, I think, is why they do that.
Jessica Carnop is a bartender at Kroll's West in Green Bay. Its neighbor across the street, Lambeau Field. Needless to say, she and her coworkers mix a lot of Bloody Marys on football Sundays.
And we actually pre-make those for the game days because we get so many of them. especially our noon games. We open up at 8 and people come in. Bloody Marys is one of our most popular drinks that they get.
But why are Bloody Marys so common for tailgating parties and for brunches across Wisconsin?
They taste so good.
All right, so we've talked about the Old Fashioned, Pink Squirrel, and Bloody Mary, all classic common cocktails found across Wisconsin. But what about something different, something modern?
So we're going to go with a cocktail we call Breakfast with Petey Pablo.
Thor Messer is the beverage director for restaurant group Rule Number One, which includes Merchant in Madison. He says Breakfast with Petey Pablo is a non-traditional scotch cocktail with chai tea, whipped cream, and most importantly, coffee.
Wisconsin has done an amazing job with coffee over the last 10 years. You know, we were looking at local producers and farmers and things like that, and we're like, well, coffee is like a legit thing that we're doing on a big scale that's really great.
And what about Petey Pablo? You know, the rapper from the early 2000s?
It just tied in perfectly because scotch is traditionally peaty. So peat is essentially the smokiness or that earthiness that you get out of scotch whiskey. And Petey Pablo, it just kind of morphed into this, like, well, that's fun.
This story was part of WPR's project High Tolerance. It's a deep dive into Wisconsin's complicated relationship with alcohol. To hear all the stories, go to WPR.org/alcohol. There, you can also find recipes for each of the cocktails featured in this story.
I'm old-fashioned, because I want an old-fashioned with plenty of brandy and cherry on top.
Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.